Good morning, Chair Imason, members of the board, State Forest Authority. For the record, my name is Doug Graff. I serve as Chief of Fire Protection for Oregon Department of Forestry. This will be your first fire season update. Am I getting feedback here? This will be your first fire season update the season. We will come to every board meeting throughout fire season. Unfortunately, with the extension last year, I think we carried this through to November. Given late fire season typically, and on your board work plans, it runs through September, October. I'm joined today to my right, Ron Graham, Deputy Chief Fire Protection, and then also Nick Yonker, Smoke Management, who will be providing a forecast for us on the outlook, and Ron will close the report out today on our readiness activity to date and what we can expect based on the forecast that our meteorologist, Nick Yonko, will be providing. Thank you.
Chair Imason, State Forester Doherty, and members of the board. I'm Nick Yonker, Smoke Management Program Manager. So we'll start out with the first slide here discussing drought. Generally, we're looking at some drought in the Northwest Washington. Fairly unusual situation when you have drought on the west side of Washington as opposed to in more of the intermountain states and so forth, and that extending into Oregon as far as increasing. In fact, the recent drought monitor has actually put now moderate drought into Clatsop and Columbia County, so that's already started. So the temperatures throughout the summertime, the forecast from the Climate Prediction Center is definitely showing again another signal of warmer than normal temperatures leading to greater evaporation during the summertime. And precipitation probability, a little bit more complex. A little bit below normal forecast for the northwest part of the Pacific Northwest. It's probably a persistence type forecast. It's been dry in northwest Washington and Oregon throughout the winter and the spring. That looks like they're just going to keep that going into the summertime, even though typically we have hardly any rain anyway. On the east side of the Cascades, eastern Oregon, and into the mountain states, looks like they're forecasting some increased monsoonal activity, and that will usually gets into the east side of Oregon. So they're forecasting somewhat of a possibility of above normal precipitation. So most likely in that part, wet lightning. So the key indicators to kind of sum up everything, discussing snowpack and snowmelt, we actually did over the wintertime, did reach in early March with a lot of moisture, low elevation snow and so forth. We did get to normal snowpack on the west side of the Cascades, which was lagging for much of the winter, and quite a bit above normal on the east side of the Cascades. But we've had a lot of snow melt, especially on the west side, and we're well below normal right now. We're under 50% on most parts of the west side of the state right now, and a little bit above normal on the east side. However, this time of year, most places have melted out where the sites are, so it's just the high elevation sites. So it's kind of got to take it with a little bit of a grain of salt. So generally speaking, Cascades West is where we have the biggest problem with snow melt. Long-term drought, generally no. We, like I said, just got a little bit of moderate drought into the Northwest Oregon, but most of the state is generally drought-free. Below normal precipitation for the state, generally we're looking at possibly most likely would be on the west side, and on the east side probably normal, maybe above normal precipitation. Dry lightning events, generally very difficult to forecast, so we're just kind of putting a possible. Generally you can expect 2 to 3 in the summertime. It's just a matter of when they hit will determine probably in some regards how the fire season will go. But generally already we've had some early fire season activity with for anywhere from the Sanium Park fire and going into April and into May. We've been generally above normal and had some fire activity. And even though we're going to have a little bit of cool weather for the next few days, it's going to get heating up next week, so we may have more activity later next week as well. So generally, the bottom line is we're seeing that the west side of the Cascades will probably be the most favored spot for high above normal fire season, with probably more near normal on the east side of the Cascades. And I'll turn it over to Ron to talk more about.
Morning, Chair Emerson, members of the board, State Forester Daugherty. For the record, I'm Ron Graham, Deputy Chief of Fire Protection, Oregon Department of Forestry. What you heard from Nick on the weather outlook and basically his forecast for the fire season is just one of the tools that we use as we anticipate and prepare for an upcoming fire season. What you see on the screen now is a product from the National Interagency Fire Center's Predictive Services Unit. And this is their forecast based on much of the same criteria that Nick looked at. And this is for the month of June, showing the elevated fire potential in the northwest corner of the state. Kind of corresponds nicely with where we see the little bit of drought moving in, above normal temperatures potentially, and potential for below normal precipitation. This has been pretty consistent as these outlooks have been produced for April and May and now moving for the month of June. So we put a lot of stock in these, quite frankly, and we track these, and they do trend to be pretty accurate throughout the season. Moving on beyond the month of June, looking at July, August, and September, at the previous release of this in May, we did not have a September forecast. It went through June, July, and August. The July, the August forecast for significant wildfire potential remain the same. This expectation is that the potential will increase throughout the summer months from western Washington down through north and central, moving into southern Oregon as we go, and consistent all the way through September, which is the new ad for the June release of this. So all things considered, we see high potential for the Cascade Crest anywhere to the west through the Coast Range. That does guide and add increased awareness for our preparedness, but as we talk here in a bit, we prepare for fire seasons regardless of what these tell us. But, you know, we take into account what this added information gives us as we go into the season.
Ron, just a question on the keys here. When we're talking normal and above and below normal, what's normal today?
Yeah, what's normal today is always a great question. You know, what we average for the number of fires is around 1,000 fires on ODF-protected lands. And right now we're burning around 40,000 acres. Is that normal? It's normal here in the recent years. 10 years ago, maybe it wasn't normal. But that's where the trend is going. And we'll speak to that a little bit more here with where the trends are going.
But that's what we're, so the normals here are the more recent normals we've been experiencing over the past 10, 20 years, right?
Correct.
So still where you have white space, there's still fire, there's still activity happening.
Correct.
Right? And more than people may have grown up with.
That's true.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. Very good.
I have a question on these predictions. I don't see you talking about fuel on the ground in central and eastern Oregon. Of course, that varies year to year significantly. And this year, we have a lot of fuel. Is that factored into any of this planning?
You know, it is. Fuel loading itself is a factor, and we're well aware of that. Fuel moistures, both live and dead fuel moistures, are something we track as well. And, you know, early in the year, our dead fuel moistures were trending downward rapidly. So 1,000-hour, 100-hour fuels, the larger fuels, were starting to approach concern levels of dryness. We got that little bit of relief in the later end of May. That helped provide a little bit of stability there. But those will continue to trend downward in the dead fuel moistures. Live fuel moistures, much the same right now. They're kind of holding steady. We got a little bit of relief, but as these cycles that Nick described of hot, dry weather continue, both dead and live fuel moistures will continue to decrease.
Yeah, that relief is also creating more fuel.
New growth is always a concern and something we watch as well. a little snapshot of the activity that we've seen year to date for us. As we mentioned, there's been early activity. In fact, we've had fires recorded in January, March, April, May, and now June as well. So it's been a busy off season, if you would. Year to date, if you would look at where we are at with current fires, 159 fires year to date as of June 3rd for 1,021 acres burned. Compared to last year, year to date, we're tracking about the same number of fires, quite a bit more acres burned, as you can see. So we've had a little bit more intense fire activity that's carrying through fuels earlier in the year that we typically don't see that time of year. Where we are in our 10-year average is 111 fires, so well above the 10-year average and well above the 10-year average for acres burned. I would point out, too, this reflects well above the 10-year average as well. So we're trending last year. Feels the same as last year. Last year was above average. So just a note. A significant amount of early season fires. We've had about a dozen named early season fires already across the state, basically in all three of our geographic areas, Northwest Oregon area, Southern Oregon area, and Eastern Oregon area. And currently we do have some fire activity in the Northwest Oregon area as well. So I think the forecast, the predictions, what we're seeing in fire activity is very consistent with an above normal fire season for us. On a broader scale, when we talk about more than just the 10-year average, this is what we look at over the last 30 years, and this is on ODF protected lands. You can see 143% increase from the late 80s through the 90s on acres burned on ODF protection. Smaller but similar increase from the late 90s into the early 2000s, 52%, to where we are currently, right around 40,000 acres burned. That's a significant increase in workload. While I said the number of fires has not increased significantly, the size of the fires, the number of the acres burned, the duration of fires, all of that fire intensity has increased and increased our workload. Similarly, we're seeing that across all ownerships, all jurisdictions. So ODF protected lands, federal protected lands, similar increase in the early late 80s, early 90s, on track with another similar increase through the 2007-10 era, and where we are currently. So from 156,000 acres average burned across all jurisdictions back in the late 80s, 90s, to 452,000 acres burned on average now. Again, a significant workload and impact on everybody's jurisdictions. So what do we do to prepare for that? We start with after action reviews after the season internally with our partners all the way up through State Forester Daugherty's level with the Pacific Northwest Coordinating Group's executive group. After action reviews are conducted and key lessons learned from those are identified. This year we prioritized several key lessons that we had to learn and things from our after action reviews, and that's ongoing work that we're doing to prepare for the season. Some of that includes the management and succession of our incident management teams, the BLM Western Oregon operating plan, how we fund and pay our fire bills, and how we safely and effectively do our job for fire suppression. Annually, we update agreements across the board from with our local cooperators, through our state partners, through our federal partners, and those are all in place. The catastrophic wildfire insurance policy was approved and purchased and is in place for this year as well. The policy parameters are still a $25 million policy, a $50 million deductible, and $3.7+ million premium. A slight increase again in the premium due to the catastrophic insurance industry's recent activity with hurricanes and fire season last year in California. Those are some driving factors in that industry.
Can you hear me now?
Yes, sir.
Could I get you to go back to the last slide? I'm probably going to ask you a question here that that I know you won't have the stats for. But I'd be curious to know, and I think this gets left out, not on purpose, but I think it just gets left out. As that increases throughout across the board there, do we know as budgets and everything has decreased, as that increases, do we have information on less manpower that you have available to you as far as full-time? And has there been increases in injuries through that? I'd be interested in seeing the information on that, if it's available.
Board Member Rose, I'll speak to the injuries, and I'll look to Peter on the overall perspective there. We did report out to the board last year. We gave this presentation. You asked specifically what the status is. We did come back last year later in the season, and we did see a general increase with, and it's a really consistent increase with exposure hours, comes a consistent increase in injuries. So we have seen that. And that correlation remains strong. Reviewing just recently in the last couple of weeks with our safety manager going into this fire season, I'm seeing that same trend. So that's something we can certainly add at the close of fire season like we did last year, specific on the safety counts. But that correlation absolutely remains the same. And in terms of staffing related to exposure hours, I'd turn to State Forester Darby.
So we did present some staffing numbers when we talked about our agency initiative. Our staffing's been relatively flat over the or slight decline over the last decade, but relatively flat. But we've seen an increase in the equivalent of about 52 full-time equivalents in workload, and we've been handling that through overtime and retirees and bringing on other people on board. So we haven't absorbed it all internally, but we are seeing a huge increase in our workloads. And again, it was identified initially in the Secretary of State audit as a problem that we're not a sustainable organization in the long run. We've updated, you know, our values, as I've talked about, in our mission, vision, value statements, and really are emphasizing safety as one of our core values. You know, we have one safety coordinator position in the whole agency. We've asked for more. Again, it really worries me when we have that number of exposure hours. And we fortunately haven't had a death associated with any of our incidences. But, you know, the law of averages says we should have. So I think we put a high degree of focus on safety at our IMTs and all of our work, but the risk is there. And we've seen it in other agencies and in the Forest Service. Again, I don't know the number of mortalities we had nationwide last year.
Fatalities in the fire service, if I'm recalling correctly, range in the 30-plus to 40 range on an annual basis. In Oregon, we have experienced fatalities on the fire line last year with contractors, volunteers in the fire service. Recent date, no ODF employees involved, but that's certainly on the forefront of all our actions as we engage with safety first.
Thank you. I think we need to keep talking about this. We need to come up with some type of resolve somewhere. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Okay, continuing on. The next agenda item, we'll be talking to you all about our fiscal budgets and asking that you approve those fiscal budgets. So I won't linger on that right now. We are just entering into our seasonal hiring and training season. As I said, we had quite a bit of fire activity already without our seasonal workforce on, and that is accomplished through our complete and coordinated system. So landowner partners, contractors, our federal partners playing a big role in that right now with all agencies not having their seasonal workforce available yet. Also, the governor's fire briefing and other preseason meetings with our partners, including the OFIC Protection Committee, Military Department, Office of State Fire Marshals, lots of preseason meetings as we continue to look at the fire season and discuss our readiness and how we will operate together. And then our severity program. I'll speak to that here in a bit, but our severity program, as you heard State Forester Daugherty mention, is being discussed right now in our agency budget through the special purpose appropriation. That's a significant and important part of our program. The aircraft and additional resources that we're able to use to bolster our district base level protection are critical to our success each year.
Excuse me.
Yes.
Noticed in our consent agenda item, we had some annual letters, and the Klamath Forest Protective Association had expressed some concern with respect to the annual agreement shifts. Could you speak to that a little bit?
Sure. Board Member Williams, the letter from Klamath Forest Protective Association primarily addressed our agreement for Western Oregon ONC land protection with the Bureau of Land Management. The Bureau of Land Management had expressed some interest in reducing their cost. As a result of that, the Western Oregon operating plan that we have with the BLM for that protection is a five-year agreement, but the Klamath resource area acres, about 55,000 acres, are identified as a one-year agreement on those lands. It is the BLM's desire to pull those acres out of ODF protection and provide their own protection. So that was the reference for the Klamath letter. You're welcome. Okay, a significant topic that we have not really had the opportunity to talk at length with you all about is strategic investments. This is the first expression of this program as a result of the Wildfire Protection Act. And this is the result of the 2016 fire season when large fire costs were below the $13.5 million cap for the Oregon Forest Land Protection Fund. As a result of that, about $1.5 million landowner dollars were available to the department to enhance the protection system across the state. What I'm highlighting here is one of the projects, and this is infrared camera night vision goggles for our aircraft. This would provide increased detection capability, location of fires, mapping of fires, you name it. And what you see on the screen below that is a shot of the exact same location. This is without infrared technology. The view totally obscured by smoke, cannot make anything out of it. And this is the view of where the fire, the heat spot fires are located with that technology. That's just one example of what that technology can do for us. You can see the Emergency Fire Cost Committee approved right around $692,000 in funding for this project. So significant contribution. The work is ongoing right now to retrofit the aircraft and hopefully have this ready for us towards the middle, towards end of fire season, right around July, late July sometime. Another example of the strategic investments, part of the $1.5 million, is increasing the number of detection cameras across the state. We've added detection cameras in Eastern Oregon area as well as Southwest Oregon area. And the tower that you see on the left of the screen is a reflection of, as we've added more cameras to the detection system, we've had to add increased bandwidth to be able to support all those. That was another example of one of the projects funded through strategic investments. And the final projects that we had funded through strategic investments were guard stations located in some remote areas in Eastern Oregon, where we partnered with ODF&W and state parks to provide housing and guard stations for our employees in those remote areas to provide increased efficiency and result access to fires and suppression. So once again, a significant contribution to our system. These are investments that are well outside of our district base budgets, and we would not have been able to accomplish this work without this investment. So, yes, sir.
Yeah, this stuff is just so exciting, and I just want to point out that, you know, in Eastern Oregon, where landowners are so sensitive about rates and so sensitive about spending these kind of dollars, and they're so excited about these kind of investments like this because truly the, you know, the protection of that resource and the protection, that's where landowners lose, is when fire, you know, burns through these forests that we're trying to manage. And so this is exciting from the Wildfire Protection Act, and I just commend the department for moving and EFCC moving forward with these kind of things, because these are really, I think, can be very, very impactful. Thanks.
Continuing on, this map reflects our severity program. It also includes contracted aircraft and owned aircraft by both the department and our associations. Our complement of aircraft, I think I mentioned briefly, is around 17 severity resource aircraft. That includes one large air tanker, a number of fixed-wing detection aircraft, Type 2 and Type 3 helicopters, and a severity hang crew located in Southwest Oregon. In addition to that, we have an extensive amount of call-when-needed aviation resources available to us. We currently have right around 195 call-when-needed contracts that we can access, in addition to the 17 aircraft that we currently have under our exclusive use contracts. With that, I would conclude our fire season outlook and preparedness agenda topic and be willing to take any additional questions.
Any other questions on this? And then we'll proceed to the budget situation.
Just one comment from Eastern Oregon, where this issue about seasonal hiring and training has come up as the fire season gets longer, starts earlier in the year and extends later in the fall, and the traditional seasonal crews from students to teachers and others that pick this summer work up haven't been available. This thinking about finding other partners in each region, each district that can get their wildland red cards and be available for that, I think is a real option. Thinking about some of the nonprofits and the other private landowners that are there that might be able to provide a little surge capacity before you bring on your crews. I think it's worth looking at. And I know certainly in Northeast Oregon, there's interest in working with you to maybe even pilot that idea. So
appreciate that.
Mm-hmm.